Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch, engineering and producing our program. John on the other side of the glass in the engineering booth. I'm in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. It's Friday, September the 18th, 2020. We're on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk here in Southern Arizona. We have our worldwide live listening and podcast of the show at buckmastershow.com. We piggyback with the KVOI live feed to put it over on the buckmastershow.com site. The Buckmaster Show live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, a big thank you to TucsonSentinel.com, the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, the Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today is with Crystal Foster, president of the TUSD Governing Board, and joining me in a few moments on the live line for our conversation with Crystal will be Dylan Smith, editor and publisher and the founder of the 10-year-old online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan is vice president of the Arizona Press Club and immediate past chair of Lion Publishers. Lion is an acronym for local independent online news publishers. Crystal Foster, how are you?
I am good. If I had known you you'd be up at Zocalo and Green Things, I would have tried to find a way to join you. I love that place.
Yeah, do you like shopping at both? You go for your plants and then, of course, all the wonderful things from Mexico and Latin America at Zocalo Village.
Yes, I was there last weekend getting some pottery, actually.
Yeah,
I agree.
I will probably be there, if not this weekend, next, depending on the availability. And I think they are starting now to have the summer flowers because I need some geraniums after this tough summer. Anyway, listen, we had Dr. Trujillo on the program yesterday, and he said so far the October 19th date is still the goal for the mix of in-person and virtual learning. Is that possible in light of the recent spike in cases here in Pima County?
Well, the first thing I did this morning was I went to the Pima County Health Department website to see their updated information, and I saw that the metrics haven't changed yet, but I will definitely, I think, the October 2nd, that's the date that we really need to pay attention to when I understand we'll see the ramifications of Labor Day and the parties around campus, right? We'll see what effect that has had. So right now I'm holding to that I will use the metrics from Pima County Health Department I have to depend on them. I'm not a medical professional and I have to depend on Dr. Colin and Dr. Garcia and their team for that information.
Well, we had a teacher shortage even before the pandemic, Crystal. This is not helping the situation. In fact, there's a new report out showing that even the boost in salary has not helped the teacher shortage. In fact, this survey, they were able to districts have only been able to fill about 28% of the vacancies that they had, retirement and other people saying they just don't want to deal with being in the classroom during the pandemic.
That's something I've been calling attention to since May, right? Since when we started planning for this, that we have a lot of teachers at the age of retirement. And we expect teachers to take care of so many issues in society. And this one, I think so many people are saying, I won't risk my life for this. We have 25% of our teachers back in June when we talked to our teachers with our survey and asked. And 25% of our teachers said that they were not comfortable coming back. And I've been listening to that and absolutely, and I'm in tune with that. And so I advocated as strong as I could for that October 1st, right, or first quarter to stay remote and to use the data to drive our decisions. And I will be the first person to vote no we can't. We're not ready to go back if the data shows that we've regressed in our community.
Let's bring in now Dylan Smith. Dylan, how are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there. I hope you guys are doing well, considering everything that's going on here and in the world.
Yeah, it's a crazy time.
So, Crystal Foster, I've got a number of questions on this. I guess the first one would be, what do you tell those parents who may not be comfortable even come next month with sending their kids back to school?
So we've committed that all year you will have the opportunity to keep your student at home. We will offer remote learning, and we won't farm that out to an online school or a different curriculum. It'll be our same curriculum, and you will have the opportunity all year to keep your child at home. I'm committed to that, and that's been our message from day one. So it really
how do you get enough teachers to do that if you're trying to hold classes in person in schools and also in parallel teach those same classes virtually to kids who may be staying at home? Where are all these teachers supposed to come from?
Well, so that's the math that we're doing, right, when we find out who wants to stay at home and who wants to come to school, and then every principal at every site has to configure that. If they have 20 teachers at their site, and if they have 50% of their student body who wants to stay at home, then you have 10 teachers stay at home and continue to deliver that curriculum from the safety of their home. And if you have 50% of your student body who wants to come to school, then that other 10 teachers will have to make that happen at school in the safest way possible.
That may work for some elementary classes. Although I can see it being even difficult there. But how does that work in high school, where you have students who are supposed to be learning foreign languages and science? And, you know, somebody who is a history teacher can't run over and start teaching anatomy and physiology, can they?
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, what we're dealing with is how do we deliver the same learning experience in a remote environment, like you mentioned, science labs.
If you have one qualified teacher at a school teaching a course, they can't teach both online and in person, can they?
Yeah,
or are you
so right now
them
we have,
doing
we
that?
Have Right. We have committees of teachers who are working through what does this hybrid model, what should it look like for us? And I know our high school teachers, they were meeting last night having this conversation, and I've heard about schedules where some teachers will still be doing one or two sections online and other sections in person. And what I'm most proud about in TUSD is that our teachers have been a part of crafting this plan. I mean, other districts I'm hearing about, the plans are drafted and pushed out, and when we don't have a solid plan on paper, we'll have that on the 22nd, but I know that the teachers, I trust, and I know the teachers have been a part of that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get like too far into the weeds just on this one specific point. I guess what I'm trying to draw out from you basically is just how complex all of these moving parts are. And it's not just from my perception, at least from what I've been seeing, it's not just a simple question of saying, okay, it's time to go back to in-person classes.
Oh, and that's
am I right or wrong there?
You're absolutely right. And I've been advocating for planning time that must be allotted to have these to know what they're going to do, because you can't just say, oh, today you go to school and tomorrow you don't, next day you can come to school. We really have to honor the planning that goes into the profession of teaching, and I'm looking forward to hearing the draft that's being brought forward on the meeting on Tuesday on the 22nd, and hear what our teachers and our staff have come up with. And I think a lot of the questions that you brought up, I'll bring up on Tuesday evening too, right? What about those lab classes, or what about our teachers who have multiple sections that they're teaching?
Crystal Foster is with us. She is the president of the TUSD Governing Board, a board that will be really changed. Crystal Foster, you're stepping aside. Two other board members are not standing for re-election. So on the five-member board, we'll basically have Ms. Counts and Ms. Grijalva will be remaining on the board, but there'll be three new members of the board. That's a pretty big change, isn't it, Crystal?
It is a big change, and it's a big responsibility for our voters. There's so much attention given to the top of the ballot and not necessarily the bottom backside where our school board races are. But there are six candidates running, and we really, really have to make sure that everybody knows what their platforms are, what their values are, what their vision is, and make sure that people are voting and having their vision and their values represented in these three new individuals that come on board.
Why did you decide to walk away from this?
So I made that decision before this COVID outbreak happened, right? I really decided that back in the spring that knowing some of the candidates that were running and trusting and seeing that my values and things I care about and believe about are represented in their platforms. And so knowing that, and I felt we were in a good, stable place too. I didn't feel like we had to, this urgency that I had to keep advocating for something so a drastic, you know, fall wouldn't happen. I really felt we were in a good place, that I had accomplished a lot of things that I cared about, right? Our comprehensive family life curriculum, that we've increased our dual language, we've reopened some schools. I feel really good about accomplishing things I set out to do, and that there were people who were sharing my values who were ready to step up and take their turn at this. And so it felt like a good time to step away so that new leadership could come on board and tackle the new the new struggles ahead. But again, I did not know that this would be, I knew I was standing up for ethnic studies, I was standing up for dual language, I was standing up for comprehensive sex ed. I had no clue that I'd be helping to run a school district in the middle of a pandemic.
All right, we're going to pause right here. Crystal Foster sticks around, Dylan Smith sticks around, and I stick around. After all, it's my show. It's Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll be right back.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com. V Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Guests appear on the Buckmaster Show live line, courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And on the live line today, Crystal Foster is with us, the president of the TUSD Governing Board, and Dylan Smith, the editor, publisher, and founder of TucsonSentinel.com. I want to go back and clarify this kind of phased-in return of employees to work, followed by support staff and teachers. This is dependent on the metrics from the Pima County Health Department. Perhaps we could go over some of those metrics, and maybe, Dylan, you would like to contribute. Maybe you've got some more on this as well. Crystal, why don't you begin?
So the phased in to start bringing people back to campus on the 21st is when our district staff, and it's interesting because in my district where I work during the day, employees have been on site through the whole summer. And so starting September 21st, the district office employees will start phasing back in, but they'll be phasing back in on a 2 or 3 day a week schedule too, and a hybrid schedule, not full time. And then the next week after that, that Monday after that, the 28th is then when our non-teaching classified staff, our counselors, our social workers, our assistants, they'll all be going back to the school sites, but again, at a modified schedule, not full-time. So still doing half of their duties at home and then the other half in person. And then October 19th, after our fall break, that Monday is then we'll phase in the teachers. And so we'll have numbers then. You know, Mr. Smith, Dylan talked about the numbers and the puzzle that each site has to put together, right, with what our parents are wanting and requesting, and then our teaching staff. And I appreciate that. I mean, our principals will look at who are our most vulnerable teachers, first and foremost, and then who are our teachers who are living with vulnerable family members. And so we will definitely take that into consideration with those conversations, those real personal decisions that principals have to make with their teaching staff for that.
Dylan, do you want to add something about what these numbers supposedly should look like, that it would be safe? What can you add to that?
Well, I guess what I'm interested in is, you know, not only what is the assessment being made now to determine when it will be, you know, quote unquote safe, or safer, I guess, would be perhaps a more realistic description to go back. But once that does happen, what will you be keeping an eye on to potentially change course? You know, what will be the factors that will make you say, we need to stop in-person classes, perhaps, and go back to all virtual? We're seeing you know, all around the country, a number of places where things had, you know, abated somewhat, really starting to heat up again in the UK, in London especially. You know, the outbreak had stemmed somewhat, and now they're talking about going back to a very, very hard lockdown. They had a lockdown, you know, much more stringent than just about any place in the United States ever had. And they're talking about going right back to that again, perhaps this week. So what will you be looking for here to, you know, so be a key signal?
There's two. So one is the dashboard, right, on the Pima County Health Department. And right now, when we're in yellow, then we're ready to start the hybrid model. And when the dashboard goes to green, that's when we can bring back everybody to full time. And then with those mitigation, right, with those techniques of the PPE to still keep everybody safe. But we have to also pay attention to what's happening at every single site. And so if there's an outbreak at a specific site and we have to close down a classroom or a site, we'll be on top of that too. And so we actually, when that does happen, when there's a report of a positive case or two at a site, then we always work with Pima County Health Department to say there's a formula. It's all written on how we work that out. And so we wouldn't, if we had one school in one side of town have an outbreak, that wouldn't change the whole district. But we would work on that case-by-case basis. But then if we're looking at the dashboard as a community for Pima County, then we would make that call for the whole district in relation to the data that's in that dashboard. And I think we're really fortunate that we're in Pima County, you guys. We really, truly are fortunate that we have the Pima County Health Department with their nine metrics and not just three, and that we're really fortunate that the superintendents and all of our school districts here have been meeting and talking and working as a team effort about this since the beginning. And rather than having one district decide not to follow Pima County Health Department or another district saying, you know, all of our parents want to go back, so we're going back. We've really committed as education leaders in Pima County to work with our health department every step of the way.
You mentioned outbreaks at individual schools. You've had at least a handful of those. How many have you actually had? Because TUSD has not been providing notice to the press about every school that you've had to close. We've gotten word about some from you guys, and others we have not. So how many have there been?
Right. So we had the first one, and we reported that to the press immediately, and then the second one, and that was reported immediately. And then I'm going to say I shared that information because I think people need to know that. And since then, I think we don't have charter schools sharing that information. We don't have other school districts sharing that information. And so I started thinking, okay, so now if we're so very transparent about every single closure, it looks like we're not keeping our people safe and other districts are, right? And so it's really, or other charters are, and I think there are outbreaks happening. I mean, I know of illnesses and deaths that have occurred in multiple districts, not just you know, people who have come down with the illness in Tucson Unified. And I would hope that all of the superintendents would also get on the same page about how are we reporting that and that we all commit to that as well. But I know that everybody if there has been an outbreak, that the people at that site have absolutely been communicated with and steps have been taken to keep people as absolutely safe as possible.
You're saying you're not telling the press about them in TUSD because other districts aren't?
No, I'm saying that I haven't been made aware of one since the two that have been reported out to the media. And that was last week or so.
Well, I can tell you we've gotten one news release from TUSD about it. One.
Right. Right. And I mean, the thing that so upsets me is that coming down with COVID, being tested positive or having a positive people feel like that's something to be ashamed of now. And so it's not even, people don't have to report to their supervisor that they are positive. And that's by law, right? That comes down to, it's really, we want people to feel that they should and feel that that is information that they have to share. But really, an employee can start calling in sick and or not. I mean, it's really, we don't have this, it's mandated that you report when you have a positive case. Nobody can mandate that of people. And it's the relationship that our principals have with our teachers and that we have with our employees, that people want to report that so that we keep people safe. And, you know, what we do have at every site is before you enter a site, there are questions that are asked, and that's really by a personal, you know, you have to make that self-assessment if you are healthy to come into the building, if you have a temperature, or if you've had any symptoms, if you've been exposed to anybody with symptoms. And we have an isolation room at every single site, and so when a student or a staff member, anybody presents with symptoms, that they are put into that safe space. And but when it comes, I mean, when people, how they deal with their own health care, I mean, I heard Councilmember Kozacek say that we should be dealing with this outbreak the same way we did with the measles, right? And I absolutely agree with him. But right now, that the laws that protect us and make that happen are not in place. People are not mandated to report if they are positive or not, and that makes it difficult. But what we can do is have those isolation rooms, have those questions. We can mandate masks. We've done that. We can invest in the PPE to keep people safe. But really, everybody's health does come down to an individual decision. And we have to do the best what we can with the information that they do share.
I wonder if I can quickly switch gears here, because we are running out of time. We had a Facebook friend who wondered about the DSEG order. Are you disappointed as you leave after 8 years that this really hasn't, the TUSD has not, you know, gotten out from under this thing?
Oh, you know, but it's really, I joke with staff that I want a, you know, a wrapped up present on my very last day in December, that we've got this goal accomplished. And when I share that, like, with Ms. Grijalva, who's been on the board longer than me, she's like, don't think it's going to actually happen. And I'm so optimistic. And it's just because once you are on the board and you realize the legal game that goes on with this DSEG case, and the amount of time and of our staff and money, taxpayer money, that goes into these goals, and they're the right goals. They are the right goals. There's nothing wrong. I mean, I stand by them, and I just think that our community needs to elect school board members who will carry those goals forward. But the litigation and the money that goes into the losses, really, that's so wrong, that so much money has been spent outside of our system, in the legal system, around these issues, when we really are doing a good job at meeting those goals, and we need to continue doing that, but we don't have to continue the lawsuit to make that happen.
Dylan, do you have a final question?
Well, a little detail on the DSEG order. Because that order is in place, TUSD gets quite a bit of extra money every year to help support those programs. If the order went away, wouldn't that money go away?
So from the first day I was on the board, I asked that question, and the answer that I've always heard is that, no, the money doesn't go away once the court order goes away, because how on earth would we sustain and keep the programs and the positions and the goals in place that we have if we establish these different departments and different courses and different curriculum, you know, investments in curriculum and such, transportation, all of those goals, if we then pull away the funding, then how could you keep that standard that you've
well,
achieved?
Extra money comes from the state, right? Why would the state be paying for it if the court weren't telling them to?
to maintain that those are goals and those are a level of education that we believe in, that is the right work. And if we do believe in that equity of achievement and integration, and that's something that we believe is what we want for our students, then we have to invest in that. Any year, it's vulnerable in the legislature, and that's before we reach unitary status or after. It's always a vulnerable point, that funding.
All right. Crystal Foster, thank you very much. The president of the TUSD Governing Board, thanks for the time. Crystal, thanks.
Thank you for having me. And you guys, please stay well, stay safe. I end every conversation with that wish.
Same to you. Same to you. All right. Dylan Smith will stick around on the live line, and we'll be joining from Phoenix, the Arizona Capital Times, Luigi Del Puerto, associate publisher and Arizona News Service editor. He'll be joining us on the live line in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Be right back.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Crystal Foster for our Friday Focus interview. Ms. Foster, the president of the TUSD Governing Board. Now on the live line, on the live line that is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, is Luigi Del Puerto, the associate publisher and Arizona News Service editor of the Arizona Capital Times, also with us on one of our live lines, Dylan Smith, the editor, publisher, and founder of TucsonSentinel.com. Luigi, how are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. Here's Dylan Smith.
Yeah, I'm kind of, to segue along with the education theme today. Luigi, I'm a little bit interested in your take in the prospects for Proposition 208, the Invest in Education Act, that would increase the marginal tax rate on some of the wealthiest folks in Arizona to put a little bit more funding into education. Do you think that's going to pass?
Well, so really, that's the $64,000 question, right? So we know by experience and by our history that Arizonans typically don't like tax hikes. So we've seen tax hikes proposals go down. That said, we have also seen the state, the voters, the public support tax hikes, especially if they're for education. If you recall, Governor John Brewer pushed for a tax hike in the middle of the recession, you know, the Great Recession from a decade ago, and that passed on the ballot. So it's, I think the kind of the formula is that it's a education, it's a tax hike, but it's for education. If the governor supports it, supports such a tax hike proposal, the chances of that passing are immediately, you know, very high. Even with, for example, the proposition, I can't remember what it's called now, 123, the trust land proposal, the governor Doug Ducey fought for, you know, the monies for K-12 education, more specifically, it helped to settle the ongoing inflation case that we had for a number of years. So in this instance, we don't have the governor's support, but we do know that Arizonans, they're, you know, when it comes to K-12 education and the education of our kids, you know, we have seen them vote for tax hikes.
Luigi, let me ask you, what has the reluctance been about bringing the legislature back into special session? Early on, as the pandemic began back in March, the legislature was very quick to adjourn. Bringing them back, and there have been advocates, mainly on the Democratic side of the aisle, that wanted to come back. What's the reluctance, and if they had come back, what could have been addressed, Luigi?
So actually, both Republicans and Democrats, or I should say some Republicans, want to go back into special session, mainly to serve as a check on the governor's executive powers, right? So they wanted to go in and, you know, effectively compel the governor to kind of listen to the legislature. So, you know, you have Republicans like, you know, Mark Fincham and Kelly Townsend. They want to do that. On the Democratic side, they want to go back into special session to do more in terms of helping Arizona citizens. So we know, for example, that the unemployment insurance, you know, that's from the CARES Act, that's gone now. And so they wanted to do something about it. So, and here lies the rub, if you will. You have members of the legislature. They all want to go, or some of them, or a big number of them, want to go back into special session. They can't agree on what exactly to tackle, and that's a big problem. You see, if the governor were to call the legislature into special session, he would have a specific agenda. We're going to tackle, you know, he's going to say, for this special session, we're going to tackle business liability. And so we're going to deal with that. And typically, before you call a special session, you have some sort of a broad agreement, or maybe even more than a broad agreement. Like you have the sense that you're going to go in and pass it, and it's going to be quick. You know, well, we don't have that. The governor, I don't think, has any intention of calling the legislature back into special session. So that's one problem. If the legislature were to call themselves into special session, they need a two-thirds vote from each chamber, which is a pretty high hurdle, which really means that before they can constitute themselves into a special session, both the Republicans and the Democrats have to agree exactly what they're going to tackle. And, of course, at some point, they got to have the buy-in of the governor. Whatever they pass, you know, unless it's a veto-proof majority or they're willing to actually override the governor's veto, right, they have to have the buy-in of the governor. And so you have all these complications. And, of course, on top of everything, it's election season. And so, it's very hard to pull people away from their campaign to spend, 3 days, let's say a week in Phoenix, right? But if they don't have an agenda, if they haven't agreed on what to pass, if there's not a two-thirds vote, if the governor is not on board, then you basically are calling legislators, incumbents who are running for elections, back into Phoenix and just to kind of wait.
Speaking of election season, we hear every cycle forever, that this is the time that the Democrats actually have a chance. We hear that over and over and over again every couple of years. Do Democrats have a chance to, we take over the Arizona legislature. They only trail by a couple of seats there. And, what about our Senate race and the presidential race here?
I would say that the Democrats probably have the best chance they've ever had in the last decade to actually overtake either one or both chambers of the state legislature. As you can tell, the Democrats have been gaining seats every election cycle. I remember there was a time when it was 25-35 in the state legislature, 25 Democrats, 35 mm-hmm. Republicans. And now it's 29-31. So they've gotten pretty close. And there are some districts that are going to be pretty tight. If you look at, for example, J.D. Messner's district, that used to be a pretty Republican district. And, well, now we have a Democrat there in the House. If you look at, District 18, I believe, you have Sean Bowie there now and two Democrats. It used to be a Republican district and for a long time used to be split representation. So if you look at, the Chandler area as sort of a bellwether for where we're going, you can see that the trend is that the state is becoming more purple. One thing to look at is the performance gap between the Republicans and the Democrats when they vote. You used to have a 12-point gap. So, the Republicans would perform better. More of them would go out and vote. And the gap between them and the Republicans is 12 points. That's a pretty, big spread. That has shrunk, over the last few election cycles. And I believe it was 6 points in the last election. I could be wrong there. But now some Republicans are thinking it could be as low as 4 points. Well, what does 4 points mean? Well, 4 points mean in a district like Legislative District 28, or say Senator Kate Brophy-McGee, a Republican, is trying to fend off a challenge from Kristen Marsh. In that district, between the race between the two of them 2 years ago, Senator Kate Brophy-McGee only won by a couple hundred votes. So what does a 4-point spread mean? It means the race is going to really tighten. And now it's a matter of really getting out your base to vote. And you can kind of replicate that in a couple other districts, right, that I've mentioned throughout the state. So you're probably looking at 4 to 6 districts that are potentially in play. And so far as the presidential race, it's kind of hard. It's really difficult to kind of look at the polling because, the last time we polled this presidential race, I think the pollsters got it wrong by a huge degree, right? And so that said, if you're looking at locally what's going on in the state, all the energy that Democrats have right now, the fact that Donald Trump has been in the state a couple of times, the fact that Joe Biden has an ongoing operation in the state, all of these tell you that Arizona is a swing state. Now, here's one thing to kind of think of. We have an early voting system, which were among the first, if not the first in the nation, to really kind of do it very well and very efficiently. Well, what that means is that there's always typically a delay in accounting, right? Because we have to process all those things, and some people turn in their early ballot on election day, et cetera, et cetera. We now have, I think, 2 weeks prior to kind of start the tabulating process instead of 1 week. But if Arizona truly is a swing state and we have some kind of a delay in our counting, you know what that means? That means the circus is in town. That means all the major networks are going to be here. You know, you're looking at potential litigation. You're looking at, you know, it's, I've heard people, some say Florida circa 2000.
Even if the vast majority of ballots are in, like what, you know, what we saw a year ago in the Senate race between Sinema and McSally, you know, so many ballots were already counted, you know, so many races called, but that one was so close that it took that extra week to figure out who actually won, because, you know, every ballot indeed does get counted at some point, even in races that are blowouts. It just usually we don't notice. In that case, we did notice because they were actually very meaningful votes, right?
Right. Kirsten Sinema, Kathy Hoffman, you know, if you're Katie Hobbs, those are statewide races that came, you know, they were kind of neck and neck. And so, yes. You're looking at a couple of days, maybe a week delay in counting, because you do have to count all the ballots. And just imagine what that means in a presidential race.
Well, we could be looking at one giant mess, kind of the bottom line here. When we do have the session, and there will be a legislative session, always is in January, who knows what's going to happen with the budget, with the COVID. Luigi, a quick comment on that.
Well, the budget's going to be the biggest item on the agenda. We don't know how much money is coming in. We don't know if we're looking at a deficit and by how much. There's a lot of industries with a lot of need, K-12 education, the healthcare industry, the childcare industry. I mean, you look, you go down the list, and all of these folks are looking to the legislature to help them, not to mention Arizona residents that may still not have a job at that point.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. All right, Luigi Del Puerto, the associate publisher and Arizona News Service editor for the Arizona Capital Times. Thank you, Luigi. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And Dylan Smith, thanks, Dylan.
Thank you, sir. And for you, to Luigi, and everybody else out there listening, yeah, please stay safe, stay healthy, take care of yourself.
Thank you very much. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Matt Russell's coming up next with Weekend Watch, getting us ready to kick off a weekend, which we all desperately need. Be right back.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust. by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. All righty, time to stir it up. It's time for Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning to visit Silver City so you are ready when New Mexico is once again open to out-of-state visitors. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson. So much to do and some great places to stay. You can find out all about it at southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Bill. And, you know, I agree with you. This is another weekend that we do all desperately need.
Why does it feel like this one especially? I don't know. It just feels like this is really a time to get into the weekend. And today is a very good day because I love a good cheeseburger.
And let me be the first to wish you and the Buckmaster team a happy National Cheeseburger Day, Bill. You know, this is an entire 24-hour period dedicated to this classically American sandwich, and the day is almost done, so we better get busy. You know, it's not too difficult to find a life-changing burger. Tucson has many of them, but my pick for today is Divine Bovine on Speedway in Wilmot. All of their 13 cheeseburgers, except for the vegan varieties, of course, are made from a blend of short rib, chuck, and brisket. And my choice for Cheeseburger Day is the 5B burger with blue cheese, bacon, balsamic onions. But wait, that's only 3Bs. Oh, yeah, balsamic bovine mayo as well. So roll up your sleeves, grab some napkins, and enjoy Cheeseburger Day anywhere around town.
Yeah, and I've heard that the vegan burger there at Bovine is really a good one, too. So there's something for everybody, Matt.
Indeed.
You know, you think about beer festivals, September, October, the autumn season is synonymous with beer festivals. And of course, COVID-19 has kind of put a damper on the outdoor one-on-one contact at the festivals.
For sure. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, how do you host a beer festival with these gathering restrictions? Well, thanks to the creative minds at the Arizona Craft Brewers Guild, a virtual craft beer festival will take place on Saturday at 2 p.m. to kind of help out the state's struggling breweries and tap rooms. They've called it Beering Arizona, and it's going to feature local brewer interviews, stimulating beer conversations, all streamed online. You can log on from a participating brewery while enjoying a brew or two, or you can prefer to log on and libate from the comforts of home. Either way works. Tickets include online access to the programs, commemorative shirts, insulated cooler bags, glassware, and more. All the details are at chooseazbrews.com.
Everybody always says my grandmother just used to make the best such and such grandma's recipes.
Yes, recipes my Italian grandmother taught me. That is one of the virtual cooking classes hosted by Flying Aprons Cooking School. Sunday at 3 p.m., longtime Tucson chef Barry Infuso will hold this class, sharing recipes from his ancestors, focusing on scratch-made favorites. Then you could cook right along with the chef in real time via Zoom. All of the recipes and the shopping lists for ingredients come with your $40 registration, and all of that information, Bill, can be accessed at flyingapronstucson.com. It's a virtual weekend for sure.
All right, Matt, take it easy. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your cheeseburger right now for lunch. Take it easy.
I'm on my way.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Original theme music composed by Christophon, thanks to my assistant Rosemary Brandt and everybody here at KVOI, including my engineer and producer John Couch, the entire team at Bustos Media, all of us with the same wish, have a safe and pleasant weekend.
VOI Cortez.